You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, it turns out that Harry Houdini was not only a famous illusionist and escape artist, but also a film star in the 1920s. One of his films, once thought to be lost for good, is making its debut showing in Wisconsin this weekend. We'll find out more about the silent film and the Waiawiga International Film Festival. Now, for the last few weeks, we've been talking about the high levels of student turnover in some Wisconsin schools and what it means for the students themselves, as well as their parents, teachers, and administrators. Aaron Richards is an education reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and has been researching this topic for the past year. The latest installment in her series looks at the role that virtual charter schools play in inflating the rate of turnover in some districts. I talked to Aaron earlier today, along with James O'Hagan, Director of Digital and Virtual Learning for the Racine Unified School District. Aaron, let's start with you and get some definitions down. What are virtual charter schools and how do they work?
There's a lot of different options for virtual education, but specifically when people talk about full-time virtual charter schools, they're referring to a school that's a public charter school hosted by a district, and these schools can be run by either the district staff or they can be run by private management companies, and they're defined by a type of schooling that doesn't require a building and a facility and walls and windows. Children can use open enrollment to enroll in a virtual school virtually anywhere in the state. So you might live in Rhinelander and you can enroll in a virtual school that's operated by McFarland, which is about 200 miles away.
And how common are these? How many do we have? How many kids are going to them?
They have grown a lot in recent years. Now, overall, they don't enroll that many students in Wisconsin. We're talking about 7,000 students total right now. But these schools have been rapidly expanding. Districts like them, both for the option and for districts that host large virtual schools, they receive some benefit because they can increase their enrollment of students because they can enroll students who don't physically live in the district. And of course, nationwide, these schools have grown in other states as well. And at last count, I think there's somewhere around, in the neighborhood of 300,000 students across the country that are enrolled in full-time virtual charter schools.
And James, in your experience there in Racine, what kind of students end up going to virtual charter schools? Who does this appeal to?
Well, we run a little differently. We are a virtual program, so we don't operate as a virtual charter school. We operate a little bit differently. But what I will say are these are kids who typically are not ones who have fit into their traditional schools, or the family feels that they are kind of, in a way, disenfranchised from their schools, and they don't really understand what their potential options are. So it is very, I guess you could say, glamorous, and it's kind of an easy fit for a lot of parents who may be struggling with their local school district to see the advertisements or to see a website that says, hey, virtual learning, you can do it at home. And a lot of parents see that as a way, as an option, or the only option that they have for a lot of their children to complete their schooling.
And Aaron, you've been studying student churn, student turnover in schools, brick and mortar schools so far. What do we see in terms of students going in and out of virtual programs?
Right. So what happened when we looked across the state at districts with high rates of churn is that a bunch of smaller districts jumped to the top of the list, and I couldn't figure it out at first. Why was this district of, in kind of the middle of Wisconsin or northern Wisconsin seeing so much turnover? And in many of those districts, it was because they hosted a virtual school. And then we said, okay. And then we looked at the numbers of students entering and leaving those virtual schools. And we found that about 38% of students who enrolled in a virtual school in 2016 were no longer there in 2017. So what we're seeing is a big exodus of students from these virtual schools. And many times they're landing back in their home district.
It's not surprising in some ways. This is kind of a new, certainly to a lot of people. They might dabble. They might experiment to see if this is a right fit for them and then back out. Is that a common part of the story, Aaron?
Yeah, and I'd like to acknowledge that virtual schools are a really good fit for some students, maybe students that have anxiety. I've interviewed a student who used virtual schooling so she could compete in equestrian competitions around the country, and she did great. She's, at Cal Poly now. But what we're worried about is that we already know that data shows that when kids switch in and out of schools a lot, it's easy to fall behind. And what's happening with the virtual churn is that kids may try it and it's just not a good fit, and maybe it wasn't a good fit from the get-go, and then they may, you know, not be enrolled in a school at all for a while, and by the time they wind up back in a resident district, they might be even further behind.
James, it seems like what happens up front before a student starts attending a virtual program and in those first couple weeks could really be key here. What are you doing in Racine to make this work, make sure the right kids are entering it and that they're successful when they come in?
So for all the students that we bring into our program, we first do a sit-down meeting. Usually it's myself doing the sit-down meeting with the student's counselor to review their academic record, to review if they have any special education needs that we could possibly or possibly not service. We also look at behavioral issues, reading competency. You know, a lot of virtual learning is competency-based around reading. So, you know, you may find very early on that a student is really not a good fit. And you try to counsel not just the parent and the student about what virtual learning is, but you also try to help them to find alternatives that are going to help get them to the end. Now, We don't operate just solely for full time. We also offer students the opportunity to try out a course. So we do have first an orientation that a student can go through, and it takes about a couple of hours for them to complete the orientation. And then we usually start them in one course, and we just say, we want you to, for the next 14 days, work in this course, and let's just find out if this is going to be a good fit. If it's going to be a good fit, then we can expand it. We can bring them into a full-time program if that's what they wish. The other thing we also use is we call it a hybrid program. So because our schools operate on what are called A days and B days, where students have varying schedules, we may say to the student, what are some courses that you would rather do face-to-face, and allow those students to continue in a face-to-face option? And then we also say, well, let's look at some of these others and do these other ones virtually. It allows the student the flexibility then, if they find that they're not being successful in a virtual environment, to transfer back to their face-to-face, and they're not nearly as credit deficient as what they might be if they went to a full-time state charter program.
You mentioned reading competency as being important, obviously, to success in online education. How about digital competency? There's a variety of backgrounds, I imagine, in how familiar kids are with doing stuff online.
Yeah, and what we've actually done in Racine, one of the other things that makes us very different than the rest of the charter school programs, is we actually have a physical space for our students to come into. As you know, the city of Racine is a high poverty area. We have children who have high anxiety, high poverty situations. And we provide now actually a space where we do have expectations that our students do as they're starting their virtual journey come in. The way I kind of equate it to when you put a kid in from a classroom into a virtual environment is like when I take my cat who has lived completely indoors his whole life, take him outside, and suddenly there's no roof over his head and he hits the ground and he's not sure what to do. A child kind of working in that same environment who has been told where to go, what their bell schedule is, what time to be there. When you say, okay, now go home where you have all these other distractions and just go be virtual and be free, for the majority of the students, and I'm not saying all students, but for the majority of the students, that's a huge transition that a lot of them are not prepared to do, and the parents aren't prepared for either. The parents, in some cases, will have to work during the school days, and they're just expecting that their child will be on the computer at home and do what they need to, and that, as we've found, is not always the case. So we do provide a physical space, a third space, if you will, for the students to be able to come in on a flexible schedule and to work in an environment that it's very much set up in as like a library would be, where we have quiet rooms, we have couches, we have various degrees of high tables, low tables. It depends on what the student feels that they need that day. They can also use that opportunity to meet face-to-face with their online mentor teacher. That's a person who is actually their person who they meet with. And then in some cases, we've actually had students who are meeting with their virtual teacher as well, too. If they just can't get it in a virtual sense, they will actually face-to-face meet with their virtual teacher, because almost all of our teachers are RUSD employees. So they're doing this as extra duty, and so it's no additional FTEs, meaning we're not setting aside employment spots for this. These are teachers already in RUSD who are doing this as part of an extra duty pay period.
All right, Aaron, we've heard a lot about what they're doing in Racine. They let kids dip their toes in the water by trying one virtual class. There's hybrid options. There's a lot of screening up front. Are these things the norm in virtual charter schools around the state?
We didn't find as much evidence of that Although I think, like Racine, there are certainly other districts that are experimenting with various forms of hybrid virtual education. I think where more finger pointing comes in is with these larger virtual charter schools where all the kids are enrolled. Well, we found that 60% of kids are enrolling in these schools through open enrollment, meaning they may never see the teacher that they're learning from. They may never set foot in the district where that school is located. And what we found was that when kids switched either from virtual schools to public schools or public schools to virtual schools, we saw a drop in math scores in 1 year, no matter which direction that switching took place. Now, to represent the side of the virtual schools, the larger ones, you know, they say, listen, you know, we're accepting these kids. They were often struggling in the first place because they got behind while they were in a public school. So it's not our fault that we're accepting this kid who is struggling. And if they don't continue to grow, the virtual schools are, you know, sensitive to the suggestion that it's their fault to, you know, when they have lower test scores or lower graduation rates. One school in Waukesha, eAchieve Academy, has pointed out that almost all of the students who came to them who were flagged for being at risk of dropping out actually stayed with them for the year. And so that should be acknowledged as well. But it's kind of like, who's responsible for this lower performing child, and how do we make sure that if he or she is actually enrolling in a virtual school, that they're going to be successful there?
And James, as we start to wrap up, can you give some advice for parents, whether in the Racine area or beyond, what kind of things should they think about if they're considering a virtual school of some sort?
Sure. The first conversation that I would have is with your child's school counselor, and that's absolutely a must. Again, a lot of parents just don't understand the options that are available to them in the school district. And it's good to just get educated on all your options that are available to you in your school district before making any switches. The other thing I would consider too, again, looking at from the lens that I do, is what services can the district also provide? So don't just look at it from an academic standpoint. One of the great things I think that sets us apart from other programs, virtual programs, is we also employ the mental health clinic in our district, because we find that a lot of the students that are coming to us are dealing with high anxiety issues. We want to make sure that, again, we're not just looking at a student's academic grade. We want to provide a holistic solution for them to make sure that when they graduate, it actually has meaning and they are cared for.
We'll leave it there for now. James, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
And Aaron, thanks for following up with us on this series.
It's always a pleasure.
Aaron Richards is an education reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and has been researching student turnover in schools. The latest installment in her series looks at the role of virtual charter schools. We're also joined by James O'Hagan, Director of Digital and Virtual Learning for the Racine Unified School District.